Okay, guys, welcome back to the A-List Lowdown coming at you April 22nd, 2025 with Ballant Bogging and Party Favors. Should be a good one.
I have a feeling it's going to be pretty pro-blue, anti-red this episode. I mean, it's kind of where I'm at right now.
Pro-blue?
Well, I mean, you know, it seems like there's just a lot of one-sided tomfoolery going on. And I mean, it's very strange. I went and, I mean, I'll talk about it in a little bit of a segment about the ballot bogging, because it'll kind of lead into, you know, other stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want to start? Why don't you start us off with that then?
All right. Well, I thought this was fake at first. I thought there's no way that there could be. Let me just open up the right one here. There we go. So I was like, there's no way this is like a real ballot, right? Like are they really going to this level? Are they stooping to this level? Like how, for one thing, how is this allowed? So what this is.
Oh,
is,
yeah, I know this. Yeah.
Is it real?
Yeah, it's real.
It looks real. I mean, I'm like, what? So this is literally how far they have to stoop. So what this is this is the Carleton riding in Canada, which is Pierre Poilievre's home riding, right? Now, I don't know what happens if Pierre lost, or what if Carney lost his riding? I mean, a little bit different because Carney's never had a riding. But what if Pierre, does it matter if Pierre lost his riding or not?
Oh, yeah. If you lose your riding, you can't be prime minister.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, technically, you could. You could be the prime minister in the, like, watching area, you know, but you couldn't really go into parliament. You wouldn't be a member of parliament. But technically, the prime minister doesn't need to be a member of parliament.
Okay.
I mean, Carney proves that he doesn't, right? Carney proves that he doesn't have to.
Losing is different than not entering to begin with.
No, I don't think it is.
Well, you know what I mean?
It would just be a weird look, because it's a bad look if the prime minister is on the like sidelines of the house, you know?
It's definitely a bad look. I mean, it's crazy. So this is what we have to deal with in the Carleton riding when out to vote. Annoyance for some, but a potential hindrance for others, right? So you got to scroll down and find where is PP's name in here, you know? I mean, I just went and did it, and there was 5 on there. It was pretty easy. There's the 5. That's it in my little tiny riding in Saskatchewan, right? This is what progressives did in Poilievre's riding. They added 56 candidates to the ballot to confuse voters. It's a perfect analogy for how progressives succeed. Harass, scam, intimidate, and confuse. Because their ideas are so bad, it's the only way. That's from Table Salt. And I mean, I don't even like to get too partisan, but this is what I'm seeing in my little bubble. I mean, you know, are we in a bubble? I mean, who would be confused? He's asking. An elderly voter with mild dementia. The point is, it's meant to frustrate and confuse. And the leader was of the CPC, was chosen for a reason. So then I had this other one here, right here from this. So then I saw this. I'm like, oh my God, it must be real. So it's a lady holding out the, it's over a meter long, her thing. It's just a repetitive thing here. The ballot in Carleton is ridiculously long. Bogging down the ballot with candidates like this is ridiculous. I mean, so it doesn't look good. It's not a good look. But I mean, I was thinking more of on the lines of like, it's a list of things, right? It's the button gate. It's the blue signs seem to be the ones getting stolen and destroyed, not the red signs. It seems to be like the lineup of people that are fingers up in the lineup, swearing and just at the opposing side, at your fellow Canadians. Like, I don't think we'd ever get to that point where I'm like, I mean, I'm pissed off at the other side, but I'm not going to go out there and tell them to fuck off and put my fingers up and stuff like that, you know?
By Canadian, then, not from those Canadians.
And then the ballot bogging, the media smears, you know, what would you say? The what?
By Canadian, but not from those fucking Canadians.
Yeah.
Those scumbags.
Not for 70%. I mean, when you look at the blue and red, like when you look at the realistic predictions, it's just the tiny little city centers that are red. I mean, even BC. I saw somebody put the BC one out and it's crazy. It's all blue except for the Vancouver City Center there, and New West is completely, I think it's orange. So I went and did it, and there are pencils in the ballot. I thought that was another thing. I saw this meme, and people that are calling out pencils are some sort of like, they're just disparaging the people that are calling out the pencils. And I thought, well, that must mean that it's fake, right? It must mean that there are no pencils in your ballots, because they used to have Sharpies or whatever markers or pens, right? For the obvious reason that it can't be opened and erased later. I mean, I always trusted our voting system, but why on earth would they put pencils in there now?
Hasn't it always been pencils?
No, I don't think it has. No,
I think it's always been pencils. No. Isn't it usually like the little mini pencils, even the little like golf ones?
I don't think so. I don't remember. I always remember thinking it was pens or Sharpies.
I'm going to see what my assistant says.
I mean, maybe that's why, because it shouldn't be a conspiracy, because it's always been that way, I guess. I mean, I just can't believe that paper ballots means paper and pencil. I mean, that's not what people mean when they say paper ballots. They mean paper and pen. So you can't just take a box away and erase them all and put an X on the next guy over. I mean.
But okay. Here's what the machina says.
Machina.
So I asked, are pencils standard in Canadian elections? Yes, pencils are standard in Canadian federal elections. Elections Canada provides black lead pencils at polling stations for voters to mark their ballots. However, using a pencil is not mandatory. Voters are welcome to bring their own pen, pencil, or other writing instrument. The key requirement is that the mark is clear. The use of pencils is primary for practical reasons. Pencils are less prone to issues like drying out or leaking, which can occur with pens and potentially spoil a ballot. Concerns about ballots marked in pencils being altered are unfounded. Ballots are securely stored and only unsealed on camera, blah, blah, blah. So let's see. There is an Elections Canada link here.
Has it always been like that?
Yeah, it seems like it's always been like that.
Okay, well, then I guess I'm just part of the problem.
You are. It would seem as though you are part of the problem, Brad. You are part of the problem.
I'm a Russian pencil agent.
Well, let's start off with this. I mean, we mentioned in the other show about Klaus Schwab retired. That's got to be good news, right?
Well, I mean, is there a big, pretty big vacuum there? I mean, this guy looks like the supervillain as well. Have you seen his like left eye? It looks like it's mechanical. Well,
so this interview is from like 12 or 13 years ago. So it's before he looks a little less evil in this picture. Now I feel like kind of an asshole because the guy probably just has an eye defect. But he does seem to be a little evil too. So, I mean.
Yeah, but it's got that Nancy Pelosi skin pullover look.
I mean, yeah, he looks like the Terminator.
Yeah. he's coming apart. His face is coming apart. I mean, I'm not trying to disparage his.
Here's what it is. He's like the Chinese knockoff Terminator. GarmickerAmerica.com. Okay, let's listen to what this guy had to say back then.
Cost curves.
So this is Peter. Oh, I'm at the wrong timestamp.
Cost curves. He said.
This is Peter.
Oh boy, you're in the pricing regulation chapter.
This is Peter Brayback on the upcoming water challenge. This is the new head of the World Economic Forum, or the interim, or whatever it is. So this is the Nestle guy.
Most of people are saying there cannot be any steering mechanism which is based on market in the water business, because water is a human right. And I can agree with those people fully. I am absolutely convinced that the 5 liters of water that we need for hydration and the 25 liters of water that we need for minimum hygiene is a human right. And as a human right, it's a responsibility of each government to assure that people have access to this amount of water. This amount of water, of human right,
did you catch how much water it was?
Yeah, 5 liters and 25 liters, right?
Yeah. So what's that, like 5 gallons?
No, a quart is very similar to a liter, so it's like 5 quarts.
No, I mean total. So you get 30 liters a day. So what's that, 6 gallons?
No, not a day. Is that a day?
That's a day, yeah.
You're going to drink 5 liters of water a day for hydration?
That's how much you get. So whether you drink it or not is up to you. That would include your cooking water, I'm assuming, as well.
Okay.
You get 5 liters a day for drinking, cooking, coffee, all of it. And then you get 25 for showering, which is like a 5-gallon pail. You get a 5-gallon pail of water to have a whore bath in.
Of water that we need for minimum hygiene is a human right. And as a human right,
that much it's water.
A responsibility. Okay, that's interesting. A 5-gallon bucket? That's not a lot for bathing.
Or basically, you're looking at a 5-gallon bucket and a little bit more, a 5-gallon bucket and a paint pan. So you get the paint can is what you get to drink.
No, because 5 liters is way more than a gallon, right? Oh.
It's barely more than a gallon. It's like 1.25 gallon.
No, it's 1.25 quarts.
Basically 4 to 1. Okay. 3.8 liters in a gallon. So you're getting like
4.5 liters in a gallon.
Oh, so even less. You basically get a gallon. You get a gallon of water. And a 5-gallon pail to bath with. That's a human right. Anything more than that, though? Let's see what he has to say.
Responsibility of each government.
Oh, that's the government's responsibility.
Yeah.
So let's just rewind this a bit, and I'll not step on it and just let this guy go for a sec.
Human right. And I can agree with those people fully. I'm absolutely convinced that the 5 liters of water that we need for hydration and the 25 liters of water that we need for minimum hygiene is a human right. And as a human right, it's a responsibility of each government to assure that people have access to this amount of water. This amount of water of human right accounts for 1.5%
this amount of human
of
right.
The water that we are using as human beings. What I'm saying is...
Sorry, what did he say? What? How many percentage? What? I think that was like an important percentage point.
1.5%. That accounts to 1.5% of our water use. Is for that. You know, half of what you're probably drinking or using in a day, honestly, it's probably half when you factor in your coffee and every drink you have is water. And so, and then you factor in the 5-gallon pail you get the bath with. I mean, if you want to have a bath, how many pails is that, dude? Like,
well, I remember in the mid-2000s, the stat was, and I remember this specifically for some dumb reason, maybe for this moment now, is 3% of the water you used, like all the water you use in your house for washing and all that, you're brushing your teeth and bathing and all that, was 3% of your overall water intake.
I mean, your toilet, you can only flush the toilet once a day. If you still get a toilet, where does that factor in? Is that part of the hygiene?
Yeah, that'd be part of the 5-gallon.
Just shit in the shower and stomp it down the drain, the old Cleveland style.
Using as human being. What I'm saying is that the 98.5% of the water that we are misusing is not a human right. There is no human right for washing my car. There is no human right for filling my swimming pool. There is no human right in order to sprinkle my golf courses. That's not the human right. Okay. So let's concentrate on the 98.5% where we are misusing. And there, the best mechanism that we have in a free market environment is a price.
So pricing regulation, you believe, is the way?
In a free market environment, the best thing is to price water?
Now, I understand that in some places of this world, this is a little bit difficult.
And this is coming from the leading bottled water guy on the planet.
Oh my God, that's Nestle.
Yeah.
And he's the new WEF guy? No wonder why all this water stuff's coming out. Oh my God.
We offer a second one. We offer what we the water cost curve. So what we are doing water is for every curve. Water basin of the world, and we have been doing it for 154 water basins of the world, we are establishing cost curves, what it would cost, what are the measurements that we would have to implement in order to balance out the demand and the supply side. In the case of India.
Now, this is what they were doing 13 years ago.
Free markets balancing out the demand side. So that's not, that 98% is not
how much water there is so they can figure out how much to charge you for it.
for example, where we did it, we came that we said total cost of $5.6 billion a year, you could balance this out. And when we showed them this $5.6 billion, which for the Indian economy is a drop in the ocean, suddenly government and the ministers became interested. Because they had thought before that this would be so costly that, as the minister said, anybody in India who would be touching the subject of water would be committing political suicide. So they didn't do anything. Only when we showed them the cost curve, they started to become interested. So we have a second possibility. The third one is what we are doing, for example, at Nestle. At Nestle, we have established a shadow price.
Shadow price.
So we start with 1 franc per cubic meter of water, up to 5 francs per cubic meter of water of a price, depending whether we are in a water rich and a water poor environment. Ooh,
water rich or water poor.
But then we establish this cost, which is a shadow cost, in order to see whether economically we can invest into water saving or water efficiency investments. But you need to have a value for this in order to be able to do. So there are three different ways how you can do that.
All right, that's probably enough for this guy.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I commented, I saw a clip going around that wasn't that clip. It was a different clip, and it was a meet the new chairman of the WEF who believes access to the most abundant resource on the earth isn't a fundamental human right. Now, when I listened to the clip, he was like, there's two options, the NGOs controlling it, or the other thing is his
privatized.
Yeah. And I'm like, so you would rather have the NGOs control water and make sure everyone has access? Either of these options seems crazy to me. And some guy responded like, I'm glad I'm not alone with this thought. But yeah, I mean, leaving it to the NGOs is not an option either. And the problem is that there's desalination technology that's not ever getting talked about. That's been in place for a long time. They can desalinate water. We have all the oceans. I mean, this shouldn't even be an issue. It's all these people meddling again in the economy and in these supply chains that make it sound like it's all free market, but it's not.
I've seen Bear Grylls drink his own piss with like a homemade bottle contraption.
Right. I mean, I don't want
to. I seen you favorite that comment. So I figured I might better get my segment in here first in case you are planning on doing the same segment. I'm going to want to make sure. Did you have it?
No.
So this is the Policy Horizons Canada. I think we missed this. I don't think we went over this in January, did we?
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, this is the one that's going a little viral right now because Pierre's been talking about it. But so this is from January, actually. This is from, so this would have been pre-Carney, right? No, did we know about Carney already by then? We had a pretty good idea he was coming, I think. So this is from Policy Horizons Canada. What's Policy Horizons Canada?
Are you really asking me? Is that rhetorical?
No, I don't think it's rhetorical. I think it's just worth knowing before we get into it.
I think we've gone over that place before.
My wife's being a prick. God damn it, Elon.
Could be me. I've been burping here, so.
Oh, no, it's saying that it went up a bar. It went up a bar.
In the meantime, David F. In the chats, thanks, David, for your comments. He says the BC Liberal government sold water rights to Nestle for peanuts more than a decade ago. So Policy Horizons, this is from Grok, is a strategic foresight organization. That's an SFO and not an NGO. Within the government of Canada, it uses foresight to help the foresight. That's just like a
wow, what a concept.
Wow, it uses foresight as an organization? To help the federal government develop future-oriented policies and programs that are robust and resilient in the face of disruptive change. The organization identifies potential disruptions and explores plausible future scenarios over the next 10 to 15 years, focusing on areas like economic, social, and governance, ESG, futures. It does not provide policy recommendations, but actually that's not the same ESG, by the way. It's environmental, social, and governance, not economic. It does not provide policy recommendations, but aims to empower decision makers with future-oriented mindset. Huh.
All right. Well, let's get into this paper. This was interesting enough, as David points out in the thing, it came out the day after Trudeau announced his intention to resign.
Oh my God. Is this the one David was talking about in here then?
Yeah, this is
the one. You guys see the paper put out by the Liberals Privy Council? Is this the one you're talking about?
Yeah, this is the one. Yeah. So this is
the one that Pierre was just mentioning. Yeah,
the one Pierre was just mentioning as well, too. So I dug it up. Let's just do, I didn't highlight this, but let's just do the introduction quick anyway to get an idea what it's about. Social mobility lies at the heart of the Canadian project. The Canadian project. That's a weird way to put it, isn't it?
Are we a project? We're post-national. We're a project now.
So social
post-national project.
Post-national Canadian project. Many people in Canada assume that following the rules and doing the right things will lead to a better life. Anyone can get an education, work hard, buy property, and climb a social and economic ladder. This is an informal but powerful promise. However, things are changing. Wealth inequality is rising. Children are already less upwardly mobile than their parents. Policy Horizons has explored some of these changes in Future Lives 2022 and Basic Needs at Risk 2023. More recently, Disruptions on the Horizon 2024 report suggests that downward social mobility might become the norm in the future. The scenario below paints a picture of Canada in 2040, in which most Canadians find themselves stuck in the socioeconomic conditions of their birth, and many face the real possibility of downward social mobility. Well, this is neither the desired nor preferred future. Policy Horizon's strategic foresight suggests is plausible. Thinking about future scenarios helps decision makers understand some of the forces already influencing their policy environment. It can also help them test the future readiness of assumptions built in today's policies and programs. Finally, it helps identify opportunities to take decisions today that may benefit Canada in the future. So let's scoot down here to housing in 2040. In 2040, owning a home is not a realistic goal for many. Most new homeowners get help from family members. Some take out intergenerational mortgages and have several generations of family living together. Others enter alternative household mortgages with friends. A growing percentage of homeowners also own rental properties. They oppose policies to expand the housing supply or freeze rents. Inequality between those who rent and those who own has become a key driver of social, economic, and political conflict. In 2040, people see inheritance as the only reliable way to get ahead. Society increasingly resembles an aristocracy. Wealth and status passed down the generations. Family background, especially owning property, divides the haves from the have-nots. Remember, this would have came out from the Liberal government. In 2040, people rarely mix with others of different socioeconomic status.
Hang on, this is under social siloing, right?
Which social is siloing, which to me sounds kind of like the UK is now. Algorithmic dating apps filter by class. Gated metaverses like real life offer few opportunities to meet people from different backgrounds. It is hard to move up in the world by making social connections that could lead to long-term romantic relationships, job opportunities, or business partnerships. Social relations no longer offer pathways to connections or opportunities that enable upward mobility. Aspirations and expectations. In 2040, aspirations for social mobility among youth are at odds with expectations of immobility. Advertising and marketing discourses continue to drive the desire to climb the social ladder, but economic realities leave most with the limited expectations of success. Cognitive dissonance between what the youth are programmed to want and what they know they can expect leads many to frustration and apathy. I don't even know that we have to wait till 2040 for that. Only a few maintain a strong drive to innovate and succeed in traditional terms. Artificial intelligence. In 2040, the value of human labor has shrunk because of AI. AI is widespread and can do many things well in creative to knowledge fields. Less work is available. Many people rely on gig work and side hustles to meet their basic needs, like us. It is hard for workers to save enough to start a business. People use AI assistants for many day-to-day tasks. They make it easier to organize work and earn money. However, the best AI assistants are expensive, and this reinforces structural inequalities. All right, let's get into the fun stuff. Policy implications. The scenario above would create a range of policy-relevant implications. The list of implications presented here is not exhaustive. Its purpose is to help policymakers broaden their models of the future. To this end, readers should ask themselves the following questions as they consider the implications. How might social immobility or downward mobility challenge policies, programs, or people? And how would the assumptions built on today's policies and programs hold up in the face of changes to social mobility? What actions could be taken now to maximize opportunities and lessen the challenges related to reduced and or downward social mobility in the future? We could probably skip this section and jump down to people's mental health. Many people may struggle to afford rent, bills, or groceries. The resulting stress could worsen mental health challenges. This would increase demand for social services. If people give up on attaining higher standards of living, apathy could spread to other areas of their lives. Frustration could leave many people deeply unhappy, with negative consequences for their family and loved ones. In addition, fewer people may have the psychological resources to volunteer and help others. In an effort to protect their mental health, some people might redefine success away from accumulating wealth and towards purposefulness or happiness. More people might be willing to job hop. Ooh, that sounds fun. For a better work-life balance or more meaningful work. Fewer people may have the drive and innovate in this context. Policymakers may no longer be able to take for granted that people will be motivated to better their lot. Canada may become a less attractive destination for migrants if it is seen as a country where upward mobility is uncommon. More people in Canada, including recent immigrants, may emigrate to jurisdictions where they perceive upward social mobility and higher standards of living are easier to attain. If young workers leave Canada, it may become harder to pay for the systems that support a growing number of older people. There could be labor shortages in sectors where AI replacement of workers or automation are most difficult. People might find alternative ways to meet their basic needs. Housing, food, childcare, and healthcare cooperatives may become more common. That doesn't sound so bad. This could ease burdens on social services, unless it's not like some weird, like, you know, forced government fucking social housing. Forms of person-to-person exchange of goods and services could become even more popular, reducing tax revenues and consumer safety. People may start to hunt, fish, and forage on public lands and waterways without reference to regulations. Small-scale agriculture could increase.
I was going to play the clip where Pierre talks about people needing to hunt and fish for their own food. I mean, this is where we're going.
Governments may come to seem irrelevant if they cannot enforce basic regulations or if people increasingly rely on grassroots solutions for meeting basic needs.
Wow, that's interesting.
We can probably skip this one, which is just about post-secondary education. People may reject systems they believe have failed them. People who work hard but see little reward may look for others to blame. Some may blame AI, big tech, CEO, and social media unions, or capitalism. They could demand tighter regulations, tax penalties, or profound revisions of certain systems. Some may blame the state. They may attack policies believed to be in favor of older cohorts who benefited from the era of social mobility. In extreme cases, people could reject the state's legitimacy, leading to higher rates of tax evasion or other forms of civil disobedience. Some could say that civil disobedience is essential to free society. Some may choose to blame those with capital, whether it is social, economic, or decision-making capital. Others may choose to blame immigrants or another identifiable group. If such scapegoating becomes widespread, it could generate serious social or political conflict.
Well, have you seen the people defining what civil disobedience is these days? Like, it's been redefined. Now it's like, oh, we can vandalize Teslas and it's civil disobedience. I'm like, I don't think that's what it means.
Declining social mobility, conclusion here, last couple of lines. Declining social mobility could create serious challenges for citizens and policymakers. What people believe matters as much as reality. The reality. It is often the basis for decisions and actions. Currently, most Canadians still believe that they have equality of opportunity. This may change. People may lose faith in the Canadian project. There it is again. They may reject policies that promote education. What about the Canadian country? Aren't we a country?
It's kind of weird because this is an official. This isn't just some, you know, university paper. This is an official government paper, right?
Yes, the usual levers may seem misguided and wasteful to those who have abandoned the idea of moving up. They could lose the drive to better themselves and their communities. Others might embrace radical ideas about restructuring the state, society, and economy, like turning it green. Would that be radical, or that's fine? Anyway, that's
what? The what? End. Like what?
like trying to turn it all green and stop like cap emissions and shut down industries and no more cars? Is that the kind of, you know, is that the kind of.
But that's what makes me think it's all on purpose. I mean, this is not just all by chance. This is all happening because of stupid decisions like the ones you're talking about.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, it could be a little both, but yeah.
I guess. I mean, it's just hard to not think that's intentional when they're like literally telling you can't buy a gas-powered car in 2035 or whatever. It's only 10 years away from now. I mean, 2030. I mean, how does that not mess up the whole infrastructure and industry?
Yeah.
What was I going to say about that? So what's the solution then to all that? Like, what would be the, is there any recommendations? Like, let's just go full blown communist and we'll have to just give everybody UBI. And like UBI, I mean,
this is where we're headed. If we kept going in the same direction we were going, the UBI doesn't fix it.
No. I of course not. I'm just saying, is this what, I mean, to me, I was thinking, oh my God, how are they going to, What's their version? Like let's say Carney gets in and he looks at that report and he says, hey, we're going to fix this problem, right? It'll be like, we're going to just borrow money and borrow more money, modern monetary theory, and pay everybody UBI. Like, that would be Carney's fix for it. I'm just speculating, right? The solution is to never put a left-leaning government into power. Thanks, David. So weird. This is such a weird time. It's going to be so interesting to see with this election. I mean, I've really changed my whole philosophy on the voting and the election because of this, where we're at. I mean, I think I even changed it since COVID, when we were like, oh, you can't vote your way out of this. It's all, you know, destroyed. It's like, well, now it sure feels like we can vote our way out of it to a certain point, at least to slow it down a bit. I mean, you know what I was thinking about too? Do you think there's a Trump effect on politicians actually having to follow through with what they say? Because I remember growing up, I'm like, they never do what they say they're going to do. Like, campaign promises were always the thing, right? Campaign promises, but, you know, Trump didn't
end it either, did they?
No, that's what I'm saying. But now, like, now they have to in some ways, right? Because some politicians are actually going in and doing what they say they're going to do, which is a sort of a new shift in geopolitics. So Trump coming in and saying he's going to do these and then signing the EOs and actually getting them done. Now it's going to force people like Pierre, if he gets in, to do the things he says he's going to do. Because if he doesn't, I don't know about you, but I'll be pissed off if we see the same old, same old.
Yeah, I agree. That's the same. It's just, you know, the only thing you're guaranteed are death and taxes.
David says, I voted yesterday, never looked at the boomers in line with such suspicion. I know, me too. That's so funny.
So, all right, what do you want to do next?
Well, I mean, I guess I could do, let me just play a couple. Let me just go through some of my things here, which are fairly short. This one here is just from Champagne Joshy here. He's like, oh no, this is the wrong one. This is the water quote. Sorry. I don't want to play that. Where's the other one? This one. So this is from Daisy Media. This is like Carney's, he's moved all his signage from
this very
on
nondescript building here
and around his Nepean campaign office.
Yeah. So all the signs have been taken off this building, but if Danny slows down for a second, slow down, Danny.
Yeah. In the very inside. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
So all of the signage has been taken down. There is nothing indicating that Mark Carney's campaign office is in here. But it is. If you look through the three layers of tinted glass, you can just make out the signs. It's interesting. Mark Carney has removed all the signage from his campaign office. What are you hiding, Carney?
Well, I mean, he knows, right? He knows people are not happy with what's happening. Was this me here? Journalists were told. What the fuck is this? How is this? How did I get to this one? Where is the other one I wanted to play? See, I got all my things organized, and now I've lost control. Here it is. So speaking of your WEF guy and all that, right? And Carney, I mean, I never thought that this seems real, but you will never hear Carney say this, of course. This is from Concerned Canadian. Carney is a WEF aligned globalist. It's time for Canada first. I mean, that sounds real. Hey, I mean, I will ban all my ministers from any WEF. I don't know what he said, connections or affiliations or work. I mean, people have long been disgusted. This is Emily with these slogans of globalization. Ordinary people care about housing, jobs, and Medicare and not working for the WEF. Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, I mean, that's the people. That's why Carney, you know, doesn't want his signs. I mean, the people are fed up with this, right? Really interesting that they cheered so loud for that. I mean, I wouldn't have guessed that even 4 or 5 years ago that people would be talking about the WEF and cheering against the WEF for that much. And then yeah. PPC still fighting back. It's he might be part of the whole thing too, but I feel like it's going to slow things down a bit, at least. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at with it. So let's just do some elbows up stuff. I mean, do you have any of this stuff or?
No, I don't have any of this. No, you go.
I mean, do you want to, I mean, I don't even know if I want to do it, but it's been kind of funny to watch, but this is, do you want to F or fight here? Pure class from liberal supporters and staffers at Mark Carney's rally in Nepean. I know somebody in Nepean, a family member. We should have her on the show just to talk about what it's like in that riding. A supporter cusses at people outside the line, then jumps the queue and is let in by staffer, who then obstructs my camera and puts hands on me.
What's that, sir?
What's wrong with you, man?
Yo, what's the matter, man? You done telling everyone to F off, man? Okay. Watch that guy. He's dangerous. Yeah, but that guy can come out for you here. They put hands on people.
So there's that one. Here's the other one, the funny one. This is from Table Salt. What's with liberal voters delivering rude gestures while clucking around like chickens?
Hi, my name's Kate. I can tell you why you shouldn't vote for Pierre Poilievre. He's a liar.
Loser.
He's a thief. Are you casting this? Because I want to tell everybody.
Are you casting this? He's a fucking loser.
Put that on. Go ahead, put that on.
I will.
Yeah.
Don't you worry about it.
That's good because it's the truth.
Okay, sir. Yeah. Pardon me? You think that's a nice, like, man, I'm just walking by filming here.
So, anyways, this is like a taste of what's happening.
But he became a real meme.
Oh, yeah, that older fellow became a real meme. I mean, it's.
That's going to be tough.
Oh, here it is. This is why I was reading this. This is why. So in case anyone was wondering, Canadian media receives approximately $2.5 billion in government subsidies. I thought it was $1.5 versus the U.S., where media receives approximately $1.3 billion. As a share of GDP, Canada is at 0.11% versus the U.S. at 0.0042. Canada has a free press problem. So I thought that was kind of interesting, comparing it that way to Canada. I mean, here's Frank Vaughn talking about some quotes. He's been going through the books of Carney's. Oh. In a chapter on the COVID response, he's like, obedience to the state was the price of protection. Citizens grant the state a monopoly on violence in exchange for the security it offers. He doesn't argue against it, merely that it must be justified. What were you going to say there?
Oh, his book report. That's his book report.
Yeah. Has he put it out yet on video or?
I haven't noticed.
I mean, we could go through some more of his, cause he's got them all quoted out, which is a great way to do it. Just put these little quotes on X for people to grab. This is from Marty up north. The liberal platform, complete with costing, has already been taken down. It got too much flack from every media outlet in the country. Carney is proposing to run $100 billion deficits for the next 3 years. His platform is even worse than Trudeau's. Weird, eh? That they would do that and then just...
I was wondering why I couldn't find it. Yeah, I was kind of looking for the breakdown of the actual budget, and I couldn't find it on the page.
There's another one. Gold is a relic. Mark Carney values. I'm an economist. Mark Carney, prime minister. Here's another one. In this regard, some of the valuation premiums on ESG assets reflect the expectation that their outperformance on ESG factors will ultimately translate into higher profitability in divine coincidence. Mark Carney values. This term, divine coincidence, is introduced later in the book to fill the gap between the top-down ideology Mark favors to force the creation of ESG-compliant, inclusive capitalism and how it will magically profitably succeed. Many of the problems in society today, from our searing inequalities to our continued destructive dependence on fossil fuels, are the result of a misplaced acceptance of the status quo. He hates oil and gas, and that rings loud and clear in this book. He will end both industries in Canada. This is from a chapter that suggests profits are not the most important purpose of a company, but meeting ESG requirements. Profit must be present, but a successive full corporation doesn't put it first, but equal to the dynamism or diversity, sustainability, equity, and other such vomit. He loves Marx and hates the capitalism. The term inclusive capitalism reigns throughout, an inclusivity defined by technocrats.
Technocrats.
Yeah.
Ba-da-ba. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's jump over to this. And I just wanted to take a quick peek at this. It was kind of that, I think. I didn't get a chance to get into the conservative one yet, but I'm going to do that for the next show, which will be, what did we say? Tuesday, Friday?
I got to work Friday now. I can't do it. So got to work day job Friday.
Aha.
I haven't told you about that yet. I haven't told you. We have to do it either Friday evening or Thursday during the day.
Friday or Thursday is fine. Anyway, we'll do it. Well, it'll be good to get one out before the election. This is the plan. Like I said, that lost a lot of the budget stuff. Now let's jump over to, I just want to jump to the secure page for right now. I mean, we know there's a bunch of craziness in it already, but this page I thought was particularly interesting. I mean, right off the start, it talks about the world increasingly dangerous and divided. Now more than ever, we need to secure Canada and Canadian sovereignty by strengthening our military, make our communities more resilient, protecting ourselves against growing threats, including in a warming Arctic, where we must work in collaboration with Arctic and Indigenous peoples so that we are prepared to face a hostile Russia or emboldened China. I think it's really interesting because they don't mention the States being the huge problem on that one. Well, let's jump down to this because now
it is kind of weird.
We get go down here and he talks about rearming. In a world of growing threats, Canada must be equipped to detect and deter those who would attack our sovereignty. Should there be a comma there? I'm not sure there should be. To do this, we will need to procure new equipment and technology for our Army, Navy, Air Force, and Coast Guard. We have a plan to meet our NATO commitments and ensure that the CAF has the equipment they need to defend our sovereignty. That means dozens of new investments in equipment for our military, including foundational investments. Wow. So they're going to get new self-propelled artillery systems and ground-based air defense capabilities so that the Canadian Air Force have the capacity to operate in today's context. They're going to buy Canadian whenever possible, prioritizing Canadian raw materials such as steel, aluminum, and critical.
Who's they?
The government. I mean, it's kind of hard to believe they weren't doing this already, that we need to like campaign on it. I mean, I'm not going to tell anyone else where they have to buy their stuff. It's good to support Canadian stuff. But the government should be like buying everything they can from Canadian, you would think. Anyway, so reinvest, and rearm. Let's go down a little bit here. Veterans, defending our economy. So the build an all-in Canada network for auto manufacturing. So let's go down to here. Here's go to food security. This is fun. A Mark Carney-led government will strengthen Canada's food security by investing in greenhouses, hydroponics, and other controlled environment agriculture that allows us to grow more types of food here at home. We'll work with the private sector to protect Canadian food security. We'll also, this is an interesting line here, if we take it in the context of the Nestle thing, support modern water management practices and safeguard local water resources as part of a freshwater action plan. So that's where they can tell you you can't take water out of the lake.
That's so weird, dude. I was just thinking about how we kind of didn't really talk about, we didn't really speculate on why they need to control the water so much, or like, you know, we've had problems with the fluoride in the water in some of our cities. They're trying to get it back in there, and then limiting water, right? Like that guy coming up with the bare minimum. Well, he doesn't think you can already wash, you can't wash your cars and you can't do these things. So where does it end, right? Where does this control end, and what are they trying to do?
So let me just read you this paragraph and tell me if you think ChatGPT wrote this. Ghost gear, lost or abandoned fishing equipment, traps and kills fish, marine mammals and seabirds, damages sensitive habitats and litters coastlines. We will work to clean up ghost gear through new innovations such as AI-powered data analysis and satellite imagery, GPS-enabled buoys, RFID tags and acoustic sensors to retrieve ghost gear in real time. These innovations will reduce harm to marine habitats, protect fish stocks, and keep fishermen and women safe. It's AI, I'm telling you.
Should they really be focusing on these things? Do they really need more money to get ghost gear? Really?
Is it that big of a deal? Rearming, we're also going to unarm. So we're going to keep our communities safe, to keep guns off our streets. We'll continue to take action to keep assault-style firearms. They banned my 22, just for the record. All while respecting the longstanding traditions of hunting, including among Indigenous peoples, and sports shooting. A Mark Carney-led government will continue to implement an efficient gun buyback program, which is not efficient and hasn't bought a single gun yet. Legislate a pre-authorization system that ensures the classification of new firearm models entering the market is determined by the RCMP. Automatic revoke gun licenses for individuals convicted of violent offenses, which already happened. Increase capacity to track down guns used in crimes. They don't really say why, but they'll have a ballistics laboratory and the National Forensic Laboratory. So they're going to get better at that somehow quickly. Toughen oversight on firearms licensing. It's like the toughest in the world. And strengthen the enforcement of yellow and red flag requirements. So if you own a gun in Canada, they run a background check on every gun owner every day, every morning. And if you have even a fight at a bar that was reported to the police, they will come and check you out.
Wow. Is that a yellow flag? Red flag?
Yellow flag. A red flag would be being charged with something. They're also going to end drug and human trafficking in our communities. And put those profiting from fentanyl behind bars.
And drug trafficking? What?
While they're rearming the states and disarming the citizens, they're going to keep you safe at home. Every Canadian should feel safe in the community, especially in their home. We will act decisively to strengthen the criminal code, more laws, and move aggressively to protect victims by making bail laws stricter, sounds like Pierre. For violent and organized crime, car theft, and human trafficking.
I don't trust any of this. I mean, why haven't they been doing all this? I don't know.
Freaking out about the notwithstanding clause because Pierre wants to do consecutive sentences for murdering, right? Instead of concurrent. So you get 25 years times four for killing four people. So 100 years instead of 25 and you serve them at the same time. So they're, and everyone's freaking out, right? But they're okay with allowing for consecutive sentences for car thieves with violence or car theft involving a criminal organization. So you can do consecutive sentencing for that and home evasions. But so now they're saying allow for consecutive sentencing for serious and violent offenses. This would require the use of the Notwithstanding Act, is my understanding. So they're basically saying in their platform, doing exactly what they're freaking out on Pierre for. And they'll also make murder motivated by hate a constructive first degree offense, including femicide, which is killing bitches.
How do you know if it's motivated by hate?
Automatically. It just is until proven otherwise.
No, are you being facetious or?
No, they don't really. It's so vague that it's just whatever they want. Remember that all of your rights come with the caveat that as long as it's socially acceptable to do so.
Well, I had that article up here that from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms that had judge rules that being upset or offended is not the same as discrimination. So that's interesting timing. That just came out a few days ago with this whole thing.
So here it says hate related crimes, which includes anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Doesn't say anything about burning churches. Mark Carney-led government will introduce legislation to make it a criminal offense to intentionally and willfully obstruct access to any place of worship, school, or community center, which will end up being parliament.
Burning it down? Is that obstructing access?
Make it a criminal offense to intentionally and willfully intimidate or threaten those attending services at these locations. Protect the safety of the gays by maintaining and supporting a Fiat Canada Pride and administrating funding for security needs at pride festivals across the country. And address the rise of hate by implementing Canada's action plan on combating hate. So,
great.
There we have it.
Well, that's probably good. I mean, let me just share this quickly then, because this is kind of one of the things I wanted to talk about as well, that speaking of hate at the end there and all that, this is that thing I said about the judge ruling that being offended is not the same as discrimination. So how do they decide all that stuff, right? So pleased to announce Nova Scotia Supreme Court has dismissed a discrimination complaint on the basis that there is no right not to be offended. So like if you offend me for being, if I'm like insulted for being short, that's on me to be offended.
On you.
In her decision, Justice Denise Beaudreau ruled that being upset or offended is not the same as discrimination. Wow. What? I mean, it's unbelievable this has to come from the Supreme Court to make some common sense here. The outcome is a significant victory that upholds the rights of Canadians to express controversial views in public without having to fear being charged with discrimination. In 2019, a student accused St. Mary's University and the Society for Academic Freedom and Scholarship of discrimination after Professor John McKinnon published an article critiquing the state of academic integrity in post-secondary institutions. The student, only referred to as Q in the publication, soon realized she was its subject. 13 months later, she filed a discrimination complaint against the university. The commission conducted an initial investigation, blah, blah, blah. On July 30th, 2024, reviewed the commission's decision to escalate the case by referring it to a board of inquiry. I just want to get to the point here. In addition to pointing out procedural unfairness due to unreasonable delays, the society argued that there is no evidence of discrimination, that human rights laws do not exist to prevent hurt feelings, humiliation, or offensiveness. On the contrary, discrimination laws are meant to address only the most extreme type of expression that has the potential to incite or inspire discriminatory treatment against protected groups on the basis of a prohibited ground. Yeah, so that's good. What?
That's how they get you.
That's good news, eh? I mean,
yeah, step in the right direction. What is that? Oh, that's you checking my math on the gallons.
Yeah.
And I was wrong. It's a good thing you did.
Yeah.
All right. Should we get out of here then?
Well, I do have one more thing that, it's about the Dre Humphrey, that the CBC correction that they put on there about the schools and the churches, the residential schools and the churches. Because Rebel News asked that, that question in the scrum, and then they got canceled for the English debate.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a list of...
Was it Rebel? I thought it was Juno and True North.
No, and it was Rebel. Juno and True North.
Rebel got in there too. It was all three of them.
You want me to read what Dre said about that? I mean, it's pretty important. She had some time to think about what she witnessed, and she put it down in X. You want me to read it quickly, and then we'll end there?
Yeah, that works. No, I didn't stop recording yet.
because this is the response quickly. This is from the Resistance Coffee Co., but he actually said these words in that order. So like this is going to be hard for you to believe. Michel Cormier, executive director of the Leaders Debates Commission, right? So executive director of the Debates Commission told CBC News that he wasn't aware that Rebel News had registered as an official third party. There's only so much we can do to control free speech, he said. There's only so much
we can do to control
free speech.
I remember that now.
Here's Drea Humphrey's, here's her thoughts on this. I think it's worth reading. So I've had some time to think about what I had witnessed at both what actually happened behind the scenes with the media at the debates and what the legacy media has been reporting about. The rebels were professional in there despite being heckled, sworn at, assaulted, having paper thrown at us, berated, lied about, followed by the media regime's constant reporting. It was more like bullying. So just for context for our U.S. listeners and stuff too, if there's any, that this is like as close to Fox as we have in Canada, but they're like a, you know, the redheaded Chep's stepkid. You know, they get beat up all the time from all sides. They're pretty partisan, right? They're very much right. They are right wing. And that's kind of one of the things I didn't like about them is they're almost too much supporting the mainstream right. But I mean, they're pretty honest about it. I mean, they're literally saying we're not journalists, just far-right agitators or activists with a website who what? Ask questions they don't like? Meanwhile, they don't even pass for the most basic ethical standard of journalism, reaching out to the subject of the report to verify facts. The only ones who did prior to the scrum being canceled and after many reports went out with misinformation about us was the other independents, like Juno and True North, right? Like the ones you're talking about. Is it True North or Northern Perspective? I get these all mixed up here.
True North.
That's because the legacy media bullies hate us so much they don't want the facts. They wanted us gone and they wanted our questions because this is not normally allowed. Like normally this was an odd scrum where actual independent media were allowed in. I mean, normally in all these circumstances with the politicians, it's just the legacy media that's funded by the government is allowed in. They wanted us to gone and they wanted our questions, the ones that hold leaders to account, gone too. Because in a way, our questions held them account too. They penetrated the echo chamber they've built with our tax dollars and exposed to some of their consumers that there's been another side to the stories they've been selling. At first, after seeing some of their false claims they made about us both on camera and in person, I thought they were just flat out liars. But after having more time to digest and recap, I believe what the rebels just witnessed was mass psychosis. Not the slow, drawn-out, boiling frog kind that we saw during COVID, but an accelerated kind. This is interesting. This is what I'm feeling too in my senses, where they sense the grasp they once had is slipping as more and more of the public distrusts their biased media. Someone has to pay for that. So they've zoned in on the commission who didn't want to keep breaking the law to keep us out. So they let us in. They came for the commissioner's blood and they got it. He's such a frail man, so weak looking physically and by this cowardly action. I don't say it to be mean. Look him up. He just is. I guess, is that him maybe? Is that what they're...
Right. And the debate commission was set up for this and people are now calling for it to be completely scrapped because of what we saw last night. I just wonder if you think there's a loss of public trust in the function of this organization.
I think the public will judge us on the debates themselves.
Yeah, that must be the guy. He just is. I saw so many regime media allies say that they sent in letters complaining about how many questions we asked and demanding that he had to be held accountable. They had his image circulating all over with wild tales that included everything except the reality, which was Rebel and other independent journalists simply walked to the line faster than the regime journalists who were too busy eating free snacks and chatting. We took our time there, seriously. We wanted the public we represent to feel we did a good job for them, and we know We have to earn that. Unlike the regime media, which gets our tax handouts to act like a mean girl club instead of focusing on the debate. They simply lost their minds that we did a better job than them, and I assume some even got in trouble for dropping the ball. Not all of them, of course, lost it, but a startling amount. The ones who weren't completely unhinged stayed silent or even commended those who were. They all stood by and watched or heard the assaults on us and did nothing. Some leaned into it. Some leaned into the mass psychosis even harder, like the journalist who kept yelling at Ezra that we had 13 people there and that the real Keane was one of them. Keane. And the guy was shaking like it was. There's a bunch of videos going around. I don't want to play them all and stuff.
Yeah, I've seen it. Yeah.
It is pretty gross and pretty crazy. I just feel like we're coming to a head on all this peak division. No matter how many times Ezra told him that wasn't true, he insisted it was. And his proof? He saw Keane and Ezra talking, and Keane showed Ezra something on his phone. I'm laughing, but it's not funny. The guy wouldn't listen to reason and was literally shaking with rage. At one point, I walked up to a journalist who was sitting near me when the Hill Times reporter lost it. I asked if he was going to be truthful about what he saw in his coverage, and he said he was going to try. Try? What do you mean, try? And the CBC? They took their strongly held false belief to a whole other level. They had spread false information about us and shut the facts down anyway. Anyway, I'd better try to sleep. What an absolutely bizarre experience. Also, here is close to the beginning of the incident. And those mass psychosis have been blaming on Rebel. I was there. Hill Times reporter Stuart Benson, completely out of nowhere, whipped around and started arguing with Keane, who kept calm and just made Benson more. So there's I'm not going to play all that, but that's it's all there. I'll put a link in the show notes as usual when the audio comes out. And yeah, just interesting drama in Canadian media.
It's good times.
Yeah.
All right, I got to piss real bad. So
all right, let's wrap this sucker up.
Over to alist.ca if you want to support us. There's a link to do so there. And of course, check out grandamerica.ca for everything we're up to. There's other podcasts, trips, books, everything else. Other than that, we love you guys. Tell your friends about the show. Like and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube. And, you know, tell your friends. Keep listening. We love you. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.